Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of November. This is the show as part of the Faith Radio Network, in which we cover the news headlines of the day. The news is always spinning. We'll do the best we can to keep up on all of those headlines, and we'll also address some of the special topics of the day, whether they be theological or social, political, having to do with family, any of these kinds of topics that are relevant for us as listeners as we're trying to walk out our days in this world with a bit of peace and joy and love. We'll talk about all of this news from the perspective of the kingdom of God, because we are followers of Jesus, fixing our eyes on him and part of a kingdom that knows no end. And I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, delighted as always to be part of this entire network with all of you, and of course with my friends in studio, Rachel Sutton, who's running the sound and board. Rachel appears a bit weary this morning, so we'll get the coffee going for Rachel as well. We'll get her up and running here in the next half an hour or so. And of course, Paul Perreault in the newsroom, who just fills my desk with stacks of headlines that are possible topics to talk through. We can never get to all of it, but we will try to ferret out those things that would be most relevant for you as listeners and for your kids, as grandparents, any of these kinds of topics. And of course, we love to hear from you every day as well. And so at any point in the morning, if you're listening to one of our guests, if you have a comment that you'd like to make or a question that you'd like to ask, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And very excited for the first hour ahead here, as we are going to talk, first of all, with Washington reporter Harvis Prude from World Magazine, who joins us pretty regularly here to give us a little insider take on what's happening in the events out of Washington, D.C. And I'll ask Harvis about the nature of the relationship between the president and the news media, including the revocation of the press pass that Jim Acosta from CNN experienced last week when he and the president got into a very heated conversation, and what the role of journalists really can and should be in our country. And after we talk with Harvest a bit, we'll change the conversation to the really difficult realities of the wildfires that are happening in California. And Sam Porter will join us, who's part of a disaster relief. He's a national director that just does a lot of work both on the East and the West Coast, and we'll get some updates. And Sam has a powerful story about how a pastor in a church was preserved in the middle of these roaring wildfires. So it should be a great conversation with him as well this hour. And as we turn our attention to that part of the news, and before we do so, thought it would be helpful to read a short passage from Colossians 3, in which, as we're thinking about life in this world, just a reminder that whether you're getting up going to school this morning, whether you're heading off to work, whether you are spending time with your family, whether you're traveling, whatever it happens to be, that our real life comes from Christ. And so Paul says this in Colossians 3, since you've become alive again when Christ arose from the dead, today set your sights on the rich treasures and the joys of heaven, where Jesus sits beside God in the place of honor and power. Let heaven fill your thoughts. Don't spend your time worrying about things down here. You should have as little desire for this world as a dead person does. For your real life is in heaven with Christ and God. And when Christ, who is our real life, comes back again, you will shine with him and share in all his glories. And it's that kind of truth that we attend to every morning here on Faith Radio Mornings as we do the news and the topics of the day. And excited with that to talk with Harvest Prude next from World Magazine. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of November. It is about 10 minutes past the hour, and delighted to be joined at this time by Harvest Prude, who's with World Magazine, and she's the Washington reporter there. Good morning, Harvest.
Good morning.
Love having you on the program like this, and I know one of the topics of conversation wanted to get into this morning, and something we haven't covered yet very much on Faith Radio Mornings, was that we saw the lead White House correspondent press reporter, Jim Acosta, we saw his press pass revoked from being able to cover some of these White House press conferences. And just remind our listeners what happened last week.
Right. So it was the first press conference President Trump held at the White House after the midterm. And CNN's reporter, Jim Acosta, sort of refused to hand over the mic after the president indicated he wanted to take a different question. So an intern tried to take the mic. There was like a little scuffle. And afterwards, the White House revoked his press pass. So the big news right now is that CNN is actually suing President Trump and some members of his administration to try and get the press pass back.
In terms of that lawsuit, I mean, it doesn't matter. Obviously, the president has no love, not a lot of love lost for more of the liberal-leaning press, but it wouldn't matter if you're liberal or conservative. There really is no right or entitlement for an individual reporter to have a press pass, and the CNN is still allowed in the White House to cover the White House, but they just revoked it from Jim Acosta. And Harvest, I'm curious your thoughts on that. I mean, I covered the Minnesota Timberwolves at the NBA for about 10 years, and you certainly would not be able to behave like Acosta behaved in those kinds of press conferences. There is rules of decorum and ways to go about doing it. I certainly, had I done those same things, I would have had my pass revoked immediately.
Yeah, it's really tricky. Some commentators have said revoking his pass sets a bad precedent, you know, if it means presidents are going to be able to pick and choose, you know, who covers them. So that could easily penalize maybe, you know, under a more liberal administration in the future, it could penalize, like, say, Christian journalists or something. But other commentators have said, you know, journalists really shouldn't make the news about them. Granted, it's difficult sometimes when Trump, you know, does have certain rhetoric about certain news media, but at the end of the day, the focus at the press conference should have been on the result of midterms, and then the focus after the press conference should have been on the news about, you know, Attorney General Jeff Sessions' ouster, you know, not a scuffle like this at all. So, you know, those are kind of my thoughts on this.
Yeah, let's talk about that in terms of the role of the journalist in just a minute. Just getting back a little bit into the specifics of the Acosta situation, he really was one of the favored reporters in the sense that he was often given the first questions to ask. And that's really, there's a pecking order often among journalists in terms of who gets to ask the first questions. And Acosta certainly has been in the White House press pool for the better part of 2+ years covering the president, or regularly given the first questions, even was given 2, 3, 4 questions to ask on this time. So is there really a line in which reporters should be, you know, able to step aside and allow their fellow reporters to ask some questions?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Like, yes, there should be more of, you know, you want to see other outlets get the chance to also ask questions. I mean, Trump did call on him, so it is kind of what the president wants to do in terms of who he asks. That is very much up to his discretion. But, you know, obviously reporters are supposed to, you know, surrender the mic and let others have their turn as well.
Yeah, and in terms of then the role of the reporter that you just referenced, is it a challenge these days, Harvest, to cover the news given the speed with which the news cycle happens? I hear a lot about how a reporter is supposed to hold power accountable, but that involves obviously demonstrating facts, and facts can take a while to ferret out. And the news cycle these days, it's pretty hard to get facts in time when everything's spinning every hour. A news source has to update its website or its news headlines, anything along those lines.
You're absolutely right. That is a huge challenge in the 24-hour news cycle, and I think that's something, you know, obviously readers and listeners may realize to an extent, but that is why, you know, sometimes you have to recant something, update something. It's really hard to try and be as accurate as possible, but it's also a very worthy challenge. It's an important function. It's something obviously Christian journalists especially like want to do very well. We want to hold truth high while at the same time doing our readers, you know, a service and holding those in power accountable. So it's I would argue it's a high calling, but also it's one that has its unique challenges, like you were talking about.
Well, and certainly there is the role for the press to be a bit antagonistic towards power. It is important in the sense that I think we can fairly say that both Democratic and Republican candidates and people in office are busy trying to shape the message to their own liking. And so it's really important that journalists do not get shut out, because they really do need to reveal the truth of the situation behind the spin.
Right. That's absolutely right. And that is why you see journalists asking hard questions, and it may not always, you know, some people might grumble about it, but that really is it, so that people can know, you know, what is actually going on.
Talking with Harvest Prude this morning from World Magazine. She's one of the Washington reporters and is on the inside of so many of the conversations there. Harvest, it's been a week since the midterm elections have passed. What's some of the news coming out of Washington, and what's some of the fallout and the rippling effects from what's happened last week?
Right. Well, I'm sure, you know, you may have talked about this a little bit, but obviously the big news of midterms was that the House turned blue, the Senate stayed red, and Democrats started talking about handing out investigations like they're handing out party favors. So there are about 85 topics that, you know, Democrats might target to sort of investigate now that they have the oversight power that the House gives them. So that's ranging from things like the president's tax returns, his dealings with Russia, the travel ban, election security, his relationship with the press. So these challenges are something that, you know, this administration hasn't had to face because it has had a Republican-controlled Congress. But, you know, in reality, it's a challenge most presidents have had to face after midterms, you know, if not more so with a totally opposition-controlled Congress.
Well, and of course, investigations, and that word has been in the headlines relative to the House turning blue along those lines. And we're seeing maybe some inklings that the Robert Mueller investigation that's been carrying on, I think, for the better part of a year or longer, seems to be coming to another part of the conclusion. We're expecting maybe some possible indictments as soon as next week. Is there any buzz out of Washington with what's happening in the Mueller investigation?
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of on the edge of their seat, still waiting for things to shake out on that. We were told that we would find out a lot more about midterms, and he may, you know, hand down some more results. So I haven't seen anything definite yet. The clock is ticking. Everyone's waiting just to see if anything substantial is going to come down the pike soon.
Well, and the House, too, has referenced the idea that, I think it was Adam Schiff, who's a congressperson out of California and the Democratic side, he acknowledged that investigations can generate headlines better than some of the policies that might be of interest to the Democratic side that they might put in play. And he said that the investigations are actually sexy in the sense that they really can gain attention. And it's something that President Trump has really done, whether, I don't know if well is the right word for it, Harvest, but certainly Trump has sucked all the oxygen out of the room and made it all about him these past 2 years. And so is there that temptation for the House to really focus on investigations to take some of those headlines?
Oh, absolutely. Investigations are a very quick way to generate buzz. And that's something that is going to have an impact, you know, heading into 2020, because obviously how well Congress and the White House work together kind of affects what both parties can get done. Something Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said was that, you know, overusing congressional subpoenas can backfire on Democrats if, you know, the perception is that Trump is able to paint it over the top. But, you know, Democrats can also argue, oh, well, we're doing what our base wants. So, you know, you're obviously going to see a fight over these investigations. But the difference is that the Democrats are going to maybe choose the battleground for these fights a little more than they've been able to these past 2 years.
I'm talking with Harvest Prude of World Magazine, who does such a great job coming on Faith Radio Mornings and giving us a little insider perspective on the news out of Washington, D.C. And Harvest, we'll take a short break. When we come back, I would love to get your take on some of the buzz you're hearing about the number of Democratic candidates for president that may be emerging over the next 3 to 6 months. And we'll talk a little bit about the election of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a Democratic socialist who is in support of the potential Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, but really has a lot of focus on energy policy and climate change. And so I'd love to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of November. I'm your host for the show, Peter Kapsner, and we are joined by Harvest Prude of World Magazine that just is so helpful in giving some ground level insights of what's happening in Washington, D.C. And Harvest, before the break, we referenced the election of Representative-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She is a self-identified Democratic Socialist, and certainly she is willing to support the potential Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, but Cortez really has her emphasis on climate change and energy policy.
Should Leader Pelosi become the next Speaker of the House, we need to tell her that we've got her back in showing and pursuing the most progressive energy agenda that this country has ever seen.
And, Harvest, I'd be curious your take on some of that. I know that as I talk with my students, part of the next generation, and you certainly are part of the next generation, and so is Ms. Cortez, energy policy and climate really is one of those topics that certainly seems to fall in the top three of importance moving forward.
Right, yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's a unique challenge for whoever ends up being the leader of the Democratic House, and right now the only candidate is Nancy Pelosi, but she's going to have to really balance the different wings almost of the Democratic Party, because you do have this election, the more progressive candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who have been, you know, ushered into power, but you also have, you know, kind of the old flank of more moderate Democrats who represent, you know, a broad base of the party in general. And so how she's going to reconcile those interests and how she's going to sort of show these young new members the ropes in terms of, you know, even though they do have the majority in the House, they don't have the majority in some. So they're going to have to figure out how to balance their desires for progressive change with the fact that they also have to work with Republicans and compromise. So,
it's going to be interesting to see, because Pelosi isn't necessarily known too much for compromising over the past few years, but that's like most politicians in Washington, D.C. And she certainly, as you mentioned, has a bit of a fractious caucus within the House of Representatives. And there were some that were elected on the platform that under no circumstances would they vote for her as Speaker of the House. But Pelosi has some pretty good political capital to work with, from what I understand, in terms of posh offices and good select committee appointments. So that's sort of the way the favors kind of work back and forth in Washington.
Right. And it's tricky because, you know, a number of Democrats who were very much just trying to win the House were saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to support Nancy Pelosi. But now that they've got this really cushy majority that may, you know, pad even further as the last election shakeout, there's really no one else who's running so far. And so the more of a cushion, you know, Pelosi has in terms of the new members that are elected, it's looking like she is going to, you know, have the leadership and be able to set the agenda and set the policy in that way.
Well, and of course, with the way the news cycle works and we see some of these kinds of headlines about policy and investigations, it seems like as much of interest in the news now as we're awaiting some of the announcements from potential Democratic candidates for president in 2020. Harvest, do we think there's going to be about 347 candidates from the way it appears?
Oh, boy, maybe more, honestly.
What's some of the buzz in terms of some of the people that we're waiting announcements for?
Right. So I would say there are a number of Senate candidates who may run or are likely to run, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. But, you know, since midterms, there have been a number of new names like Beto O'Rourke, who lost his, you know, Senate bid, but is still kind of a darling among progressive Democrats. So honestly, I would say to people who are maybe tempted to get anxious about this sort of thing, like, oh, who's going to run? Who's going to, you know, win the nomination? Maybe just give it a few months, a few weeks, and kind of we'll see who ends up making their bid.
Well, certainly one name that was conspicuously absent from your list, Harvest Prude, was Hillary Clinton 4.0. Is there any real buzz coming out of that whole situation?
You know, I read an op-ed about that just yesterday, and there is some buzz, but really, I feel like a lot of Democrats would really push back on that. So we'll see if that that turns into anything.
I'm not entirely sure that our country could handle one more Clinton-Trump kind of showdown over the course of about 18 months. Is there anybody within the Democratic Party that you see emerging in terms of having kind of that going toe-to-toe with the president? Because like him or don't like him, and there's reasons for both, he certainly will punch and punch hard. And that was even some of what Pelosi said, that whoever's standing at the House of Representatives needs to be able to take a punch and throw a punch. It speaks to the level of our politics these days. But is there anybody that you see emerging from the Democratic field that could go toe-to-toe that way?
I think that is the number one question that Democrats are considering themselves. In terms of, you know, who are we going to support? Because it's going to have to be a heavyweight contender. There's no name in particular that sort of jumps out and rises above the field. That's the conundrum I would say Democrats are in going into 2020, and the midterm elections didn't really give them a clear answer.
I love the perspective that you bring to us from Washington, D.C., Harvest. I appreciate the time that you take out of your morning to kind of give us that first-person, ground-level look at everything. I hope you have a great rest of the week ahead.
Thank you so much. You as well.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Sam Porter, who is the Southern Baptist National Director for Disaster Relief and has quite a few stories coming out of the wildfires of California, as well as some updates on the ongoing cleanup efforts of the hurricanes on the East Coast. Sitting next to me in studio is Rachel Sutton, who runs the sound on the board, one of the great producers for Faith Radio Mornings. Rachel, a little weary this morning.
A little bit, yep.
It's early hours, and I mean, you know, young, trying to get used to the schedule. Have you ever heard, is this still a thing to have Cabbage Patch dolls or kids in this generation?
I've definitely heard of them, and it's still a recent thing.
Well, there is some news coming out that the group The World Against Toys Causing Harm is releasing its list of dangerous toys for the holiday season. Watch, or The World Against Toys Causing Harm, claims the list raises awareness of potentially dangerous toys. Rachel, here they are. Making the list are the Nerf Disc Blaster, the Black Panther Claw, a Power Rangers Super Ninja Blade. These all sound great to me. And then get this. A Cabbage Patch Kids Dance Time Doll. The doll made the list because Watch says its headband can be removed and swallowed. Oh. Toy associations claim that Watch needlessly tries to scare parents. So, Rachel, as you're thinking about gifts for your siblings this year, maybe stay away from the Cabbage Patch doll. We're afraid that they're going to swallow the headband.
Yep, and they would be sad about the Nerf. That would make them sad.
Yeah, that disc deal is really important for, I know, our boys. So there's your headlines coming for the holiday season. I guess avoid those gifts for fear of harm. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Jennifer Dugan. She and her husband, Mark, are in pastoral ministry just north of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And she was talking about social media and teens who have found community in an increasingly fragmented age.
In some ways, social media kind of connects them all to all their places, but really it's a superficial closeness. Where we found teens who have a strong community is the ones who have been able to invest in a youth program or something where they're in it for the long haul, and it takes time and commitment to carve that time away. We've been thrilled to see teens who've been able to say, okay, I'm committing to this for the next years of these Wednesday nights. I'm going to try to come. I'll serve into the leadership thing. And what we found, one way to merge families and teens wanting to be able to build their strengths of maybe music skills or other things is to be able to give them leadership in the church. And that's been a neat thing, to be able to have chances to give young people leadership in the church where they can come and lead maybe music on Wednesday nights, because then they have community and talent that they're building and they're growing in their faith as well.
So nice to talk with Jennifer yesterday on some of these issues facing our teens and just facing our church. We are talking a bit about how the most fastest growing segment of our population identifies as none in terms of their church affiliation. And Jennifer's at the ground level of that and gave us some good insights there. So if you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and see all of what Jennifer had to say yesterday. Well, I see on the line we have Sam Porter, who is the Southern Baptist National Director of Disaster Relief. We're going to talk to Sam both about the wildfires on the West Coast and some updates there, as well as the ongoing cleanup efforts on the East Coast and what Sam does sort of day in and day out, helping people recover from so many of the disasters in our world.
With Thanksgiving almost upon us, we do well to fully understand all its dimensions. This is Jim Garland, think of Thanksgiving as a concept in multiple levels. The first level is simple thankfulness for all you have. A home, family, nutritious food to eat, clean water to drink, even air to breathe. There's nothing wrong with that kind of gratitude. It shows you take nothing for granted and don't live with an entitlement mentality. But I consider it only a starting point. It's easy to be thankful for all the good things in life. But what about the bad? That requires the next level of thanksgiving. That is gratefulness. Thanking God when you either don't have a lot of good or when you have too much of the bad. That, my friend, is where real faith comes in. And we should aspire to nothing less. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of November, about 20 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in the line by Sam Porter, who is the Southern Baptist National Director for Disaster Relief. Give us some insight on what's happening with some of the headlines I think many of us are following, including the wildfires in California. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, doing well. It's a little chillier here in Minneapolis-St. Paul than maybe some of the places you travel to, including California. And I guess because that's true, those fires are really raging out there, aren't they?
Yes, sir. It's just been, well, California has actually been under almost continual fire deployment and reaction for almost 2 years. But the campfire, they call it the campfire because the guy was had a campfire. And it got out of hand, and now it's burned, just hundreds of square miles. And so the Mike Bivens, our state director of disaster relief for California Baptist, told me late last week, he said it's truly the worst fire he's ever worked, and he's a native Californian.
Well, and certainly, yeah, I don't understand just even the nature of the wildfire and how it spreads as quickly as it does. But from my understanding is that it doesn't necessarily just sort of come on you slowly and you can see it a little bit. It almost, in some cases, because of the wind, it shifts direction really suddenly and can come upon a house or a community almost like a hurricane does, from what I understand.
Yes, sir, that's correct. Well, the nature of California, they call it the Golden State, and a lot of people think it was just because of the gold rush in the 1800s. But in the fall, after having prolific rains and all in the summer and spring, the California native grass grows really large. And especially in Northern California, they have these little trees called redwoods that go about 200 feet tall. And so with that, the fuel that fuels the fire, with big, tall, thick grass that's dry in the fall, and then these enormous trees, and then the Santa Ana winds start blowing out of the mountains back towards the Pacific, it's just the right mixture to be a devastating event. And so it actually literally will get to burning, and then the embers from these tall trees and also the grass with 30-mile-an-hour winds, it will pick those embers and throw them several hundred yards away, and one ember drops in that. And so that's why it just multiplies astronomically and very quickly. And that's why you can be just fine, and then next thing you know, you're surrounded by fire. And that's what's happened in these small communities.
And for these communities, where did they really even have places to go? I know that they probably are such a suggestion even ordered to evacuate, but people don't really have a lot of places they can just suddenly pick up and move to. What is that like for people if the wildfire begins to threaten them?
Well, it really is, especially in the mountains where the campfire is. That's far northern California, north of Sacramento. And, mountain roads wind and twist back and forth, and the fire goes straight across country. You know, hills and valleys and steep slopes make no difference to a raging wildfire. It just keeps going. And so the fire service, National Fire Service and State of California Fire Service do an incredible job, and they try to let people know ahead of time. But the nature of we as God's creation, we want to take care of ourselves, and they think, well, we'll be okay, when really these fires have come through, and they truly, you've heard of the town of Paradise, that it is, you know, about 20,000 people and nearly the entire town burned. And then there's a little small town up in the mountains, about 30 miles up in the mountains from there, called Magalia. And that's one we've been focused on, a very small town. And they tried to evacuate the town. And a pastor there at Magalia Pines Baptist Church knew there was about 30 people that came to his mind that he knew could not get out. He spent time trying to gather them up, you know, elderly people didn't have money to buy gas to go down the mountain, some single-parent moms. He had about 30 people, and then he was about to run out of town with them, drive out of town with them in a couple of church vehicles. And the deputy sheriff said, "You're too late. You cannot go." And so he had to go back and take refuge in the church, and that's the story I wanted to tell today about what happened there.
Yeah, it's really, Sam, a phenomenal story of what took place because, you know, the heat from these fires is unlike, I think, anything that I would be familiar with, and how quickly it can devastate when it's been raging for that long. I mean, it just gets white hot, but it was quite an incredible story about what happened with this pastor. So tell our listeners about that.
Well, after he had gathered these 30 people that, you know, I mean, he's obviously a pastor with a pastor's heart, and the people that had, you know, resources to get out and drive 30 miles out of the mountains. There's only one road in and one road out to this little town. This pastor began to gather these people that he knew if the fire came, they would not survive. And so with his compassion driven by the Holy Spirit in his life, he began to gather them. And then again, as the deputy said, "You can't make it. Your best chance is go back to the church. Seal up the church, in other words, close all the windows, close all the doors where no air can come in that would draw the fire into the building." And they did that, and the deputy sheriff said, "And you guys just pray." And obviously they did those things, and obviously with the fire, he said within just a matter of minutes, like what we talked about, the winds had, you know, when he was gathering people, the fire was nowhere that he could know was close, but they warned him it's here. And sure enough, when they got back to the church, his explanation is the woods or the forest around us just exploded, and it just, everything was on fire. And so they were in the church. They could see out the window that a Subway, you know, sandwich shop across the street caught on fire and literally burnt to the ground. There was a hardware store next door to them, just fairly close, and that began to burn. And it had a lot of propane out in the rural areas. A lot of people use propane tanks for their heat and the cooking source. And he said just bombs started going off because these propane tanks started exploding. And so basically everything around the church burned. And so they stayed there, prayed, and stayed all night. When they woke up the next morning, or when they probably didn't sleep much, but the next morning when light came, the entire town around them was totally gone. and the church and the grass and even the dry leaves, the fall leaves on the trees right next to the church were untouched. And they knew that God just basically had his hand on them and protected them because everything else was gone in that community.
Sam, that kind of story gives me chills to hear that. I confess I don't always know how prayer works. I don't always understand when and how God moves. But clearly this is a story that's almost right out of the Old Testament, isn't it? That it just, if we were reading that in the biblical text, we might sort of look at it in disbelief. But God still is on the move in this world.
That's right. Yeah, contrary to a lot of popular belief, God still performs miracles. And I see those kind of things on a regular basis. We pray, and then many times, just like you said, and I said the same thing, that is unbelievable. But again, that's how God works. He does the things that we cannot do. He does the things that are unexplainable. And that's why we fall on our face and worship him. That's why we turn to him for salvation in our life, because we can't save ourselves. Sometimes we cannot help ourselves, but we have a God that can do those things for us.
That's the voice of Sam Porter, who is the National Director for Disaster Relief for the Southern Baptist Convention, and been talking with us this morning about some updates on the wildfire in California and a wonderful story of preservation for a church there. Sam, when we come back from break, I know that you're involved with more than the wildfires in California, and there's been ongoing disaster relief efforts on the East Coast of the United States with the hurricanes, so we'd love an update about that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of November. We're speaking with Sam Porter, who's the National Director for Disaster Relief for Southern Baptists. And Sam, clearly the campfire and the wildfires of Northern California and Southern California have our attention, and understandably so. But I think what tends to happen, at least from a news cycle standpoint, is the news loves to cover these events for a little bit, and then as soon as the event ends, the news cycle sort of spins on. But there sure are a lot of people whose lives are affected for days, weeks, months, even years ahead.
Yes, sir. That's right, Peter. Like you say, the news cycle, the media, they want to get the dramatic scenes and dramatic stories. Radio, you tell the stories. Television, they show the scenes. But the devastation goes on, like you say, for years. If you can just imagine, there is approaching 7,000 homes in California have been totally destroyed, plus hundreds of businesses that you don't just fix in a week or two. I mean, it affects people for many years sometimes in recovery. And so that's where the Christian nation, so to speak, in other words, that's where the church comes along beside, and that's where we step up. And there's a lot of faith-based groups out there that do disaster recovery, disaster relief. And Southern Baptist, we're one of the largest. We have there's 42 state Baptist conventions across the United States. We're in all 50 states, but some conventions cover like Washington, Oregon are together, Kansas, Nebraska's together. Some of the more southern states they're on their own. But we have 42 different organizations in these Baptist conventions that are the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief. And every one of them, even Hawaii and Alaska, have smaller disaster relief teams. And we go together. And so, right now in California, we're supporting them with finances because you can't do a lot of things around the fire, obviously, but we're there as soon as the fire passes. And so that's what we're doing there with Mike Bivens, Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, and the churches, and anyone that wishes to participate in the funding there. And right now, Mike has laundry and showers set up, mobile showers and laundry for people that have lost everything. In other words, there's over six to 7,000 families that are displaced. They can't go wash their clothes. They can't take baths there. Their homes are gone. And you multiply that times the number in families. And then also the trauma that goes with that. We have, across the United States, close to 2,000 trained chaplains. They're not all pastors. They're people that have that gift of helps and gift of listening and sharing. And they go through a three-weekend course to become a certified trauma counselor for disaster relief. You know, they don't have a degree, but they've gone through. And we have them there in California and also in the Carolinas and Florida and Georgia and Alabama, sharing with people, walking through their difficulties with them spiritually.
That's such hopeful news, Sam. I love it. You used the phrase just a moment ago, a Christian nation. I usually associate that kind of phrase with sports like Red Sox Nation or Sooner Nation, something along those lines. But I love the idea that there's a Christian nation that is free from a lot of the rules and regulations and can just sort of step in and help where people are in need. That really is what does shine a light in the world, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. And I use that term every once in a while because it takes a team effort, you know. It takes a team effort. And, you know, we have the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, and I was the state director in Oklahoma for 19 and a half years and trained about 10,000 people. And then September 1, they asked me to be the last year in 2017, they asked me to be the national. So I just started calling it we all wear gold/yellow shirts, and I just call it the Gold Nation because, you know, there's that very same concept you're saying, because it does take a team. It takes a large team, but we only have one coach, and his name is Jesus.
Talking with Sam Porter this morning, that does a lot of disaster relief work around the country on behalf of the Southern Baptist Convention. And Sam, we have a little over a minute left. If some churches or ministries that happen to be listening this morning want to get involved with some of the relief, are there places they can go to get involved, even if they're not part of the Southern Baptist Convention?
Yes, they could get involved. They could go to get involved through. They could go to sendrelief.org. Sendrelief.org is a very simple way to get in there, and it would give them a pathway to how to connect with the state the state disaster team in their state, and it will point them to that director.
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on this morning onto Faith Radio Mornings and giving us some stories, some firsthand accounts. Sam, that story about the church that was preserved, even though the entire town had been devastated, really points our eyes and fixes our eyes on Jesus in a different kind of way. So really appreciate your time and the stories that you shared with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having us, and I'd be glad to come back and share any other time we need to.
We would absolutely love to have you. So thanks for joining us, and we'll take a break here and wrap up the first hour of the show and preview what's coming next on Faith Radio Mornings. I confess I'm still a bit stunned by that incredible story that Sam Porter told. Again, I know there can get to be, unfortunately, some skepticism that God really is on the move in this world and don't always understand how, when, and why, or how our prayers affect all of that. But to have a story like that where a church was preserved in the midst of absolute devastation in the wildfires really brings a sense of hope and faith and fixes our eyes on the kingdom of heaven yet again. I'm excited for hour two here. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to be joined first by Hugh Welch of the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. And he's going to give us a little update on the ongoing expansion of Amazon as Amazon continues to seem to take over our entire world. And we'll talk with Hugh about that first. And then after Hugh is done, we'll speak with Hannah Anderson, who's an author, and we'll talk about the importance of discernment in our faith. And that discernment isn't just for the spiritual elite. It's for anyone who would be following Jesus with the power of the Spirit.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.